I think we'll move on to the fishery matters that are not public hearings. Number 8, river herring.
It's not often that staff has to come before you and talk about recommendations that involve setting a total moratorium on fishing for a species. In fact, I think we've only done that a couple of times in the last 30 years. Striped bass in the late 80s, American shad in the mid 90s. Both of which, by the way, were anadromous species, as are river herring. Keep in mind, river herring is a common term for two different species, alewife and blueback herring, which makes it that much more difficult, and we'll get into some of those difficulties here shortly. The management advice and directives come to us on this issue by way of the Atlantic States Marine Fishery Commission and their Interstate Fishery Management Plan, which was amended in May of 2009. They gave the states until January 1, 2012 to come into compliance with that Amendment 2, and that's why we're here on this issue today. River herring present a very classical example of a total stock collapse, and I think while there's not a lot of data on these species here in Virginia, I think the coastwide harvest graph that you see here shows pretty clearly that stock collapse. One of the dangers that I'd like to bring to your attention when we look at data like this or other data that are related to the population of river herring is the tendency to focus on more recent years and ignore the past, particularly with fishermen who weren't fishing 30 years ago and perhaps have only been fishing the last 10 or 15 years, tend to look at that window in time and are not aware of what this population looked like back in the 1950s, 60s, 70s. And so when they notice blips here and are not aware of what they've seen in the past, they think, wow, you know, we're having a great year. This is population is very healthy, but fail to realize that in the past, decades ago, populations were significantly higher than what we've seen in the last 20 to 30 years. And we'll show you some other graphs where that kind of problem could occur. The provisions of this Amendment 2, which we're now required to abide by under federal law, require all the Atlantic coastal states to declare a moratorium on commercial and recreational fishing for river herring by January 1, 2012. Unless a state submits an approved sustainable fishery management plan, that is, that it can prove to the ASMFC that the fishery that it has is sustainable. The ASMFC has looked at a number of these plans in recent months, and they've approved a few of them. We'll show you what those look like. But just to jump ahead.
Jack, can you do me a favor? This may sound awful. Explain from a fishery management perspective, since we've got a little time, what sustainable means for fishery managers.
Well, sustainable means that the harvest that is occurring is doing no long-term harm to the population and can be continued into the future at that level without continuing to cause harm to the stock. In other words, the stock will sustain itself even with that level of removals as defined in that management plan. Four states prior to the adoption of Amendment 2 had already declared a moratoria, and they're listed here. In fact, North Carolina's, I think they declared a moratorium in 2007. And that was about, I think, the time that the other states came forward and, using their own information, decided that they needed a moratorium to protect the stocks in their states. And I think that in part was the where the pressure began at ASMFC to convince the other states that we probably need a coastwide moratorium on these two species. Several states have already announced or given some early indications that they too will be adopting moratoria in the very near future to comply with the management plan, and those states are listed here. The question before you today is whether or not Virginia should be added to this list. The guidance that we find in the plan is this, that systems with a sustainable fishery are defined, again, and this gets back to your question, Chair, that demonstrate that their alewife or blueback herring stocks could support a commercial or recreational fishery that will not diminish potential future stock reproduction and recruitment. Guidance goes on and says that states who choose to put these plans together are required to develop sustainability targets, very clearly defined levels of population size or spawning or recruitment that define a healthy stock. And furthermore, they're required to monitor those populations into the future to show that they are at or beyond those sustainability targets. And that's what we get at here, the annual monitoring requirements. Just to give you a comparison, we do a lot of monitoring, for example, on striped bass, looking at population size, age structure, juvenile recruitment. That cost us about $500,000 a year just for striped bass alone. The state has never committed any money to developing those types of targets for river herring or doing the type of monitoring that would be needed to determine whether or not we're meeting those requirements. There was federal money several decades ago that was provided to the states to look at some of their anadromous fishes, but for the most part, those monies were directed to the more valuable species of striped bass and American shad and not to river herring, and that's why we lack a lot of the data that we need to understand the status of these stocks. This is a listing of the types of data that we think one would need in order to convince ASMFC that our stock or any stock is sustainable. And in particular, the top three data elements, juvenile abundance, adult abundance, and spawning stock biomass, are critical to describing a stock as sustainable or not. And these data have to have been collected over a period of several decades. Getting back into that period of abundance that I showed you in the earlier slide, it doesn't help you if all of your data are located in, say, the 2000s or the 1990s. Since abundance has been so low. Examples are provided of the various data elements, and in fact, you'll see in the slides ahead that some of the states that do have sustainable fisheries have all of this type of information and have it for multiple decades. And one of the convenient things about monitoring anadromous fishes is because they come into freshwater to spawn, makes them a little bit easier to count, particularly if you have a fish ladder or some type of point that they have to go past. Now, we have one of those points here in Virginia at Boshers Dam on the James River. That's a fish ladder there, and there's actually a viewing screen with a video camera watching that point of passage for fishes. You can actually go to the game department's website and view in real time by video that that viewing station. We've never seen a river herring pass that fish ladder at Boscher's Dam. Some of the states to the north of us have multiple viewing stations and a number of fish ladders and have been able to count fish for decades. And they know exactly what the population is. They count every fish that goes past that point. So it's quite convenient when it comes to management. Unfortunately, we don't have that convenience here in Virginia. Here's New Hampshire's data elements that they have. They do have a lengthy historical seine survey that tells them about juvenile abundance. They have these fish ladder counts, I think it's 7 different sites in their state, so they can actually make very accurate counts of the size of the spawning stock. They've been monitoring this for 40 years, periods of abundance and not abundance. They have very small fisheries up there, but they went through a lengthy process of presenting all of this historical information to ASMFC, and the ASMFC approved their existing fishery as sustainable. And so they do not have to adopt the moratorium. They do have to maintain the regulations that they have in place to control those fisheries. And of course, their commercial and recreational fisheries are quite small anyway, so they're not too worried about that. The state of Maine, likewise, was able to present evidence, again, of sustainability. Again, they have fish weight counts that date back several decades. They have long-term surveys that capture the healthy periods of the stock, and apparently many of their runs in their state continue to be healthy. There are some, however, that are not healthy, and they have closed those. They also have fairly strenuous regulations on the recreational harvest, limiting anglers to 12 fish per day, which is quite low. North Carolina implemented a moratorium in 2007. Nonetheless, they did come forward to ASMFC and ask, present a sustainability plan that would allow for some very small harvest, primarily for research purposes, so that they would continue to have access to fish to monitor the status of the stock. And that was approved. They are the only state on the Atlantic that actually has a full-blown stock assessment that showed that their stocks back in 2005 were in pretty bad shape, and as a result, they implemented a moratorium in 2007. Question is, South Carolina is the last of the states that has also been approved for a sustainability plan. They have very low harvest. Most of their state will be under a moratorium. There's just one river system in the state that this sustainability plan will apply to, and they will be allowed to have a fishery in that system. The question then is, what data are available here in Virginia that we might use to convince the ASMFC that what is left of our fisheries is sustainable? And unfortunately, while we have pieces of information related to these various data elements, they're highly variable, not long-term, and upon examination, don't reveal anything about sustainability. We have, in fact, contacted all of our sister agencies in an effort to make sure that we have left no data source uncovered in the process of looking at this. We've obviously talked to VIMS, VCU, Dr. Greg Garman there, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Game Department, and none of those agencies have really been able to come forward with data that convinces us that a fishery of any level would be sustainable. the rest of these slides will show you some of that data and some of the problems that we have. Again, the databases are for a limited number of years, and when you look at the index data, they're highly variable. Not only that, river herring, like salmon, return to a particular tributary consistently to spawn. And so data that we might collect in the James River would not be at all applicable to the Rappahannock or the York River. So you, to manage these species properly, you really need good data on a tributary by tributary basis. And unfortunately, we don't have that. This is an example of some of the data on blueback herring. VIMS does have a trawl survey. Unfortunately, it only goes back to 1996. The numbers that you see here, I suppose, represent some relative index of abundance, but I would, you know, I'm very confident that had we had this survey in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, the numbers that you would see from them would be significantly higher than the numbers that you see in this graph. And in fact, I have a letter from Dr. Fabrizio, who runs that trawl survey, indicating, in her opinion, that that would very likely be the case. Again, alewife data from the VIMS trawl survey doesn't provide us with a lot of confidence that the stock is in any way, shape, or form very healthy. We do have juvenile abundance indices for alewife and blueback, but again, unfortunately, only goes back to the late 80s. Had this data gone back to the 50s, 60s, and 70s, I think it would present a pretty clear picture of the status of the stock. But even in these years here, you can see that most of the indices are quite below, in fact, well below the survey averages. Same type of data for the blueback herring. So bottom line is the critical data that we need here in Virginia to be able to argue sustainability are completely lacking. And quite frankly, if you were to ask me to put a plan together to submit to ASMFC, I'm not sure what we could put in it, other than to go beg, you know. I just, and that would speak to our credibility, I think. Here are some of the actual data, again, on adult abundance. And even that doesn't present a very promising picture. But again, to go back to that earlier point I made, if you're a fisherman in 2008 and you see this blip up, you might think, my God, you know, this is a great year. We're seeing 10 times more fish than we saw the previous years. But again, that fails to take into account, you know, prior years when things were much better off. Again, these are the types of data that we have. This is harvest information. You can see that compared to the earlier decades, harvests are quite low. There's the more historical data for Virginia. It goes back to 1929. Now, there are a variety of reasons that have been put forward by the scientific community as to the cause of the stock collapse. I don't think any one of them holds more weight than any of the others, but to list them, they would be obviously overfishing, loss of habitat, construction of dams, stream blockages, poor water quality. And in fact, in the 60s and 70s, prior to the creation of the Magnuson Act, there was a very large foreign fishing fleet off the mid-Atlantic that harvested a lot of river herring and shad in the process of catching other species, and that undoubtedly played a factor in the health of the stocks up and down the entire Atlantic coast. Now, one other thing you have to mention is that landings don't always present a clear picture in terms of the status of the stock, because the markets for river herring and Americans' interest in eating river herring today is not what it was in the 50s and 60s. So even if we had the same number of nets
or herring row
today directed on river herring, you wouldn't, and the population were still as large as it was in the 50s and 60s, I don't think you'd see people out trying to catch them because the markets aren't there. But nonetheless, I think simply looking
That's because a generation has not been availed to the opportunity to eat herring roe that used to be a staple in Virginia for moderate income families. I mean, I can remember as a kid, you know, that was one day a week or something like that. And it was very inexpensive food stuff. You go buy a can of herring roe when you could at the end.
Not only that, there's so many other seafood products out there that are available to the public that seem to be preferred.
Well, I think as the chairman just pointed out, back in the 50s and 60s, there were canning plants that canned the herring roe, and those don't exist anymore. Other anecdotal evidence, as I can remember in the 50s, we were all saying in the Matapan Island, catch herring to salt over the winter. That doesn't happen anymore.
I guess Coward Seafood, and all of you all know former commissioner, commission member Lake Coward, his plant is one of the last canning of herring roe, and they got most of their product out of Carolina, and then when Carolina implemented their moratorium in 07, that pretty much went away. That's just a summary, again, of the historical catches here in Virginia. So we've seen declines basically at 99%.
Jack, if we have a moratorium, what do we do about the bycatch? Because you've got
that's an unfortunate situation.
Those nets coming up the York River.
There have been discussions of that at ASMFC. To the point of several months ago, there was the thought that the moratorium should not apply to bycatch. There should be some tolerances allowed for bycatch. And that went through several months of discussion. Ultimately, the decision was that the moratorium or the sustainability plans, whichever direction you chose to go, had to apply to bycatch as well, that there would be no tolerance allowed. That's where we are now. That may change. And if it does, we would bring that to your attention. But for the time being, Amendment 2 requires you to show that even if you only have a bycatch fishery, you have to prove that it's sustainable. And we can't do that here in Virginia.
Now, well, let me ask a question. What does that mean if we were to go that way? Does that mean that we would not be able to have those staked gill nets in the York River at all?
It means that if a fisherman catches river herring in his pound net or staked gill net, he's going to have to throw them back overboard.
It dead or alive.
Doesn't mean
dead or alive.
That we have
sure.
to prohibit those nets from fishing.
Okay.
They're still free to fish for other species, but they will not be allowed to keep river herring.
So dead or alive, they'd have to throw them back.
And that's going to present a problem for our pound net fishery because, you know, on any given day, those nets are subject to catching 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 pounds of fish. And they're going to have to sort through that to throw out what might be a dozen river herring. And I think so. There's going to have to be some discretion on the part of our law enforcement division to recognize that fact and take that into consideration before they write summonses.
Mr. Shook,
I mean, also have a moratorium on bycatch is not sustainable fishing either. I mean, they're dead. And I know we've talked about that at the Atlantic States, but
if everybody were honest, we wouldn't have that problem because then it becomes
the
a directed fishery.
Right. That's the problem.
It doesn't matter what you're dealing with, Mr. Chick, whether it's fisheries or whether it's anything else.
5% caused 95% of the problem.
And that's
always.
And that's exactly
what we have to address.
Right.
Yeah. One of the big areas of concern in bycatch is not so much in state waters, but what is or could be occurring in our ocean fisheries. And the Mid-Atlantic Council has been working on this now for some time and trying to reduce that bycatch and see some of those fisheries. The last thing I want to share with you is that there are people here in Virginia who will be affected by a moratorium. One of them is a Mr. David Adams, who is the owner of Adams Sports Mart in Providence Forge. It's a convenience type store that sells fishing tackle and caters. A large part of his business caters to recreational anglers who dip herring at Walker's Dam on the Chickahominy. And he has expressed grave concern about what a moratorium will do to his business. He cannot be here today. He may show up if you approve a public hearing next month. And I think you have a statement from him in your package that speaks to that. If not, there'll be one on the way, I'm sure, from him. He's contacted a number of legislators here in Virginia to make them aware of his concerns, and we've showed him the types of information we have or don't have. We've made presentations to the FMAC. We've gone up to the New Kent area, which is his stomping grounds, and made presentations to the watermen up there more than a year ago to warn them what we thought was coming from this. And of course, the time's arrived, and that's where we are now. I also want to draw your attention to a statement from Dr. Eric Hilton, who is the anadromous fishery specialist at VIMS, and that's behind your evaluation. And again, his statement is, given this lack and imprecision of data, sustainability of Virginia river herring fishery cannot be supported. And you know, I think that's the bottom line of what we see here.
Mr. Fox?
Jack, there's a great recreational fishery in the, I know, the James River around Richmond and the Mattapony as well, for anglers who cast for both shad and herring in the spring. Now, with the moratorium, would that be eliminated, or?
Catch and release would still be allowed.
Catch and release would be okay.
Catch and release would still be allowed. We
for the time being.
A lot of shad taken up there in that stretch near Richmond. And, of course, they're already under moratorium.
Mr. Schick?
What type of levels are we going to discuss as far as, I mean, I guess we need a benchmark to be able to bring this fishery back, which I don't see happening anytime soon. But, I mean, is there going to be some type of plan developed coast-wide as far as, you know, that type of data being brought forth? Or
Rob has been in touch with Mary Fabrizio at VIMS, and she's in charge of the trawl survey there, and she's given some indication in that letter that we might down the road be able to develop some indices of that tell us something about the status of the health of resource, and that survey is going to continue. And so I don't think we can define the level yet that would constitute a healthy stock, but certainly over time we might be able to do that, and that would be the earliest indication that things have improved here in Virginia to the point where we might be able to have a fishery once again. But to be honest with you, I think we're looking at decades before that would happen, not 3 years from now or 5 years.
Mr. Plumlee, Jack, why are you still doing it? Can you put that the first slide that you had with the all the way back in the 60s and 70s? Mr. Plumlee?
Do we have a phase-in plan that is going to be presented, or is it just is the idea that there would be a moratorium after some effective date statewide?
River herring are present in Virginia waters only in the spring when they come in to spawn. So beginning, you know, early March, and by the end of May, they're gone. ASMFC amendment requires us to have the moratorium in place by this coming January 1st. And so we would ask that you hold a public hearing next month to consider implementing the moratorium. The effective date could be any time between June 1st and, or rather, July 1st and January 1st. But it really wouldn't have an effect until the next spring.
So the idea is if we can't put together a plan within the next few weeks, a sustainability plan, then we're going to be required by the larger group to install the moratorium one way or the other, whether we like it or not. Are there any options under the moratorium with regards to phase in, or can you only do that after you institute the moratorium and then you resubmit a sustainability plan for maybe one river or another, you know, like you described in a couple of the other states?
There's no allowance for phasing in the moratorium. If you have a sustainability plan that has been approved or will be approved before next year, then you're free to keep those regulations in place. In the future, if you see changes in the status of the stock to the point where you think some level of a fishery is sustainable, then I'm certain ASMFC would be willing to review the information that a state has to justify that.
Thank you.
For all of the ASMFC species, every state is required annually to present an update of the information they have on that fishery. And we will continue to do that on river herring and shad.
I know most of my colleagues, probably by virtue of what I know about them, grew up down tidewater, down in this area. Maybe Mr. Foxy related his experiences on the Mattapani, but I can tell you anecdotally, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, whether it tells my age and also tells where I live, good, bad, or indifferent. I grew up in Claremont on the Upper James, then moved to Hopewell, which is on the Appomattox River. Well, during those months that Jack just described, I mean, it was something to see the number of people that would come out along the Route 10 corridor with dip nets. Matter of fact, the law was you could dip on the east side of Route 10, but not the west, if I remember correctly. That was, once it got to that side, they were in safe haven. But I can remember those years, the amount of herring that were just, you could look over into the creeks that came off the tributaries of, let's say, the Chip Oaks, which came off the James, and you could look and look like literally like piranhas. People would use nets that were at least a third the size length of this table to dip these fish. And that graph really shows when we stop seeing people showing up in mass to go and catch these fish recreationally. I mean, we used to send Marine police officers when I first came here in 92, 93, 94, up to the dams up in the Appomattox River up in Petersburg. Well, that dropped off because there wasn't any need to. And Mr. Plumlee, you were talking about the moratorium, how we might do this and might do that. I'll tell you, with a fishery that's in that bad a shape, and it's real, I mean, it's not, it's, yeah, that graph right there is very accurate, and it needs some help, so. That's just my ability to have an anecdotal observation based on geography and time span, because, heck, when we were kids, we used to skip school and go to the Appomattox River and dip them out with crab nets. Swear to God, they were that plentiful. You could catch them with a crab net off the shore of the Appomattox River between Hopewell and Petersburg. Not there now. I stopped just during this period along the same very, very popular stream along Route 10 when I was coming back from Richmond, just to look. It's not there. Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The ASMFC, when it took action on the amendment, did so in 2009 and allowed for a significant delay between the time it took action and the actual implementation of the moratorium to give states an opportunity to develop sustainability plans. I think it's unfortunate that we don't have a sound scientific basis for arguing that our fishery is sustainable, and unfortunately we're simply limited by the available data, and it doesn't sound like developing those types of data sets is within reach, at least from a practical standpoint, in the near future. As Jack pointed out, these runs are river specific, and up and down the coast, collectively, there's a great deal of concern about the status of the stock. A few river systems still have healthy runs, and I think that's reflected in some of the sustainability plans that you have seen. But by and large, the resource is down very sharply. And so, as Jack pointed out, the commission has asked both regional management councils to develop amendments to their plans that would reduce bycatch of these species in the offshore fisheries. So the mackerel fishery and the herring fishery are both undergoing and very close to completing amendments on the management of river herring interactions in those fisheries. So I think another issue of concern, though, is ultimately potential impact on our state water fisheries. As Jack points out, there has been some discussion over the last few commission meetings, but I don't think that final chapter has been written in terms of how the states are going to respond. For example, after some of these moratoria go into effect at the state level, and as the regional councils put in perhaps time and area closures on the offshore fisheries, what other concerns might arise with respect to interactions in the state water fisheries. But I think it's unfortunate that we can't do anything to accommodate the fishery in the Chickahominy, for example, but I just don't think we have enough data, and the data that are available point in the wrong direction.
I think that's as important as anything. Yeah. Mr. Bowden?
I was Marine. I guess maybe I'm not quite as old as you, but I went in the river.
Yes, you are. Not getting by without them.
I've been fishing for a very long time, and herring were a problem for me years ago, because if you were mackerel fishing, if you got into herring, you didn't catch any mackerel, you were just inside of them. The mackerel always stayed just outside of them. So they have really plummeted. There's no doubt. I think I caught three this spring, which
that's a pretty good sample.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be sometimes you worry you get 30, 40 bushel, but really the problem is going to be offshore, and it's going to be up to the councils and NIMPS to do something about it. We all know what it is. He mentioned several of them. You know, up until this year, I don't know how it is this year, you could buy all the herring you want for crab bait from New Jersey coming from the midwater troughs for mackerel. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was plentiful. This year seems like they're mostly Menhaden half for some reason. So, I mean, there's no doubt. I think they're worse than that. I'm really surprised that's bad as they are. And I think the only reason they're like that on that graft is you do have some rivers that still have sizable catch. If it weren't for those few rivers,
be off the
scale. It would look, you know, it would look just like the blue line, flat line. Mm-hmm. It would be dead. But like I say, you know, we got to press the councils to move fast on it, because you'll never bring them back. And, you know, they're never going to be a valuable fish anymore because people just not there. I was one of the biggest shad fishermen in the state of Virginia. And every year I saw less and less demand for shad before the moratorium. I had one man I was selling to in Maryland that would buy 450 pounds twice a week for the sale at his market. And towards the end, he was getting 150 pounds once a week for about 6 weeks during the season, because the people every winter he would lose two or three older people, and there was no young people taking them. So it's not just the fact that people's lost the taste for them. People don't have the time. They don't want to.
And those doctors don't want you eating salted herring.
Yeah, I don't want to eat it either because it's disgusting.
I love it.
pickle herring is even worse, so I wouldn't be very good with sardines, maybe. But, you know, I'm in agreement with that, but we really need the councils to work fast. And it's not just going to be in Mid-Atlantic Council, because a lot of the problem is in the North Atlantic.
Okay. Let's do this. Anybody else have any comment? Matters before the commission. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we advertise a public hearing for a moratorium for the next meeting of the commission, consistent with staff's advice.
Second to the motion?
I'll second.
Second by Mr. Bowden. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously.